all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone with VeteransRadio.net. We are recording today from the Legal Help for Veterans studio in Northville, Michigan. Legal Help for Veterans is a veterans disability law firm. You can reach us at 800-693-4800.
We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Oriana Pollack. Oriana is a air warfare reporter for military.com. Welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Well, this is an interesting topic. We're going to talk more specifically about the new Space Force that has been created out of the National Defense Authorization Act. But before we get there a little bit, I know you went to the University of, or I should say Miami University in Oxford, Ohio, where you got your bachelor's in journalism and English. And I knew you, I know you grew up in Chicago. Tell us a little bit about how your career path ended you up as the air warfare reporter.
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually ended up taking a capstone class at Miami University in Ohio that dealt with, embedding with the military and being a journalist that would travel along with the military. It was a very interesting class. I had found a lot of use in it, and it really put me on the trajectory of seeing, you know, and opening my eyes to how the world would be if, you know, journalism was taken on the road and how journalism is when you are embedded with a unit. So I didn't particularly have the experience of doing that when I got out of journalism school. But I did, you know at that time how to really work sources like that and really, you know, hone those skills to getting to know the military and how to report on it. So really what it's led to is me being able to understand how, you know, the Pentagon works and how the Air Force works and, you know, the ins and outs of various services and aviation especially. But it really did, put me on that path, that class of, you know, just enjoying how you can see how a service develops and how you can be a part of, you know, this watching the story develop in front of you, especially with the military angle. So I took to a huge interest in that, and I'm happy that I did.
Well, it certainly has turned into very interesting times for this aspect of your journalism career. How did a nice kid from Chicago who grew up in an American-Ukrainian household end up heading towards journalism?
I don't know. It was really just the fact that I was just not very good at math, I guess. It really just had to do with, I think at the end of the day, I've always fallen back on the idea that the first thing that a person does, any person does, is when they, you know, come home from work or they come, you know, home in general to talk to the person that they love, the first thing they do is they tell a story. And I've always hinged on that idea, is that the things that bring us closest together is we tell stories. And so I really enjoyed the storytelling process, and, you know, that led me to, you know, English, but as well as journalism. And, you know, I think that, you know, you get a first row seat to history in journalism, and that's always been such a you know, privilege to have something like that. And that's kind of what steered me toward that path. And, just science was just not it.
Well, you have to have a certain amount of intellectual curiosity because, as you say, you're on the cutting edge of everything. You're hearing it before others do, maybe. And that's a bit why we're having this discussion today. But it's an interesting time, I suspect, for you also as an American Ukraine who's apparently proficient in Ukrainian. So
yep.
this is more in the news than it maybe should have been.
I know, and it was a very big surprise, actually. Something that, you know, you would always have that conversation in grade school and high school, like, what's being Ukrainian like and growing up in that culture, especially since it was really ingrained in me as a kid. It was actually the first language that I spoke. So to see it, proliferate in the way that it has recently in the news is just very, it makes me, you know, a little taken aback because, you know, the things that I would like the public to know about, you know, Ukraine and its history don't necessarily have anything to do with what the news is going on right now. It's, you know, there's other things is to, you know, Ukrainian people and to, you know, their message as well and what they want to achieve. And I would hope that some folks can see some of that as you know, the news takes on a life of its own these days on, you know, how it steers towards Ukraine and what Ukraine's all about. But, you know, like any country out there that wants to, you know, do better for itself, you know, there's some growing pains. And, you know, it's just one of those things that it just happens to be in the spotlight right now.
Well, we'll save that discussion for another day, because I think it would be fascinating to hear what's really what Ukrainians really think and what they might be interested in, American Ukrainians might be interested in their other members of the United States knowing about the country versus just the really one-sided look that we're getting from the press, because it's election time and it's always good to smear mud. So, but let's move on. Tell me a little bit about military.com for any of our veteran radio listeners who don't have it on their daily feed like I do and should. Tell us about military.com.
Yeah, absolutely. It's you know, it's a website that's dedicated to veterans and each of the individual military services on, you know, the news of the day and policy changes and things going on in the military communities. It's been around for quite some time now, at least over 10 years. And, you know, we are individual reporters who, you know, look up everything that goes into each of these services and things that are going on in the Pentagon, but also outside of the Pentagon, things that are happening at different bases all around the world. And, you know, what does, you know, the national defense strategy mean? And we kind of break those bigger ideas down to how it matters to the everyday individual, especially if they are a veteran or if they are an active duty service member serving right now. And so that's kind of it's the news of the day, but it's also beyond the news of the day of, you know, trying to see those big picture items, but also whittling it down for why does it matter to you.
Well, the hosts here on Veterans Radio certainly look at it as a must read every day, so we're glad that we have a chance to talk to one of its ace reporters. And you were focusing primarily, I think, on the Air Force and some of those issues, and somewhere last year somebody must have come to you and said, hey, this Space Force thing, is it going to get any traction? And who are we going to give the assignment to? So how did you end up picking up Space Force as part of your portfolio?
So with the Air Force kind of having, and by kind of, I mean really having its hand in the space portfolio, I mean, it was very interesting to see how this really developed. You know, in 2017, the idea of a Space Corps initiative actually rose up in Congress, which was the first time that anyone ever heard of an individualized group of people looking specifically to space. And, you know, that took a turn to the end, really. Space Corps never ended up happening. But, you know, as the president really got involved with the Space Force idea, we saw that take on a life of its own. And, you know, when President Trump announced it in front of folks at the White House next to Chairman Dunford at the time, saying, you know, make it happen. And the idea was resurrected once again. And then it was back on the Air Force to try to figure out a plan, as well as the Pentagon, to try to figure out a plan of how to put a group of people together that encompassed, you know, not the future of it will have not just the Air Force included in it, but all the military branches out there already. And so now they're all devised with a plan of how do we put this organizational chart together when we haven't had a new service since 1947. So that's kind of what's on planners right now, is to develop this entire group of folks, about 16,000 or so in coming months, that will just have the space focus mission. And again, those are the people who already had a space focus mission, but now it's a part of something that's a little bit larger because it is an independent service under the Department of the Air Force.
Yeah, let's clear that up for folks, because I think there's some similar language that may be confusing to those who are listening. The Air Force had Space Command, but we're now talking about a separate service called Space Force. Explain that a little more to folks, because, again, it sounds like, aren't those the same thing?
Right. So Air Force Space Command, as of today, as of December 20th, when the National Defense Authorization Act was signed, no longer exists. So those folks who were assigned to Air Force Space Command back in their headquartered in Colorado, of course, but any base that had that was part of the major command, Air Force Space Command, have now been assigned to the U.S. Space Force. All those people have been assigned. They haven't all been, quote-unquote, transferred. There's a delineation of how the Pentagon is parsing out this wording on who is going to be actually physically transferred, is going to take a commissioning, an oath of enlistment going into the U.S. Space Force. Those things have yet to happen. But the people who at this moment, given that Air Force Space Command does not exist, they are assigned to the U.S. Space Force. And this is completely separate, or at least it's tangential, from when in August the Pentagon stood up the 11th Unified Combatant Command, which is U.S. Space Command. They kind of resurrected that idea as well, because U.S. Space Command used to exist, but then it closed up shop a couple, 10 or so years back, and now U.S. Space Command is back as a combatant command. So that's running alongside the U.S. Space Force. The U.S. Space Force is going to be the folks that train and equip and organize the folks for the combatant command, and the combatant command will be out there tasking those operations and doing those operations, of course. But, so that's just kind of how that transitioned over. But that's still to say that right now the Air Force is making the calls on how the organizational structure is going to work, because the Space Force falls under the Department of the Air Force, much like the Marine Corps falls under the Department of the Navy. So it's a broader service in general, and the Air Force is still calling the shots. We have the first ever Chief of Space Operations, General John J. Raymond, who is on the Joint Staff now, and he works with the Secretary of the Air Force, Barbara Barrett, to get this organization rolling. So it's a little strange, and when you look at an organizational chart from that perspective, and it's going to get even more complicated as people come into the service, but at the same time, that's just still in the planning stages of how exactly these folks are going to align to what. But at this time, Air Force Space Command has just been reassigned as U.S. Space Force.
It is a little fuzzy, I think, as they go through trying to sort this out, because as you said, and I want to back up to it, Space Force is supposed to be responsible for organizing, training, and equipping the mission. But I think it's U.S. Space Command that will actually be DOD's warfighting arm in space. Is there a real division there?
It's not much of a division as the Pentagon funnels through folks on a day-to-day basis to the various combatant commands. Just because you're assigned the Africa Command, you hail from the Army or something along those lines. The day-to-day Space Force goal of, it's just, what's your parent company at the end of the day? That's what it looks like. Who do you adhere to? That's just the U.S. Space Force. But the day-to-day job that you will be doing goes hand in hand with what U.S. Space Command will be doing, and that is protecting satellites or, doing offensive or defensive electronic warfare capability or any of those types of things. So it just depends on, how they decide to work and funnel these folks through to the combatant command, but also space individuals are needed at the various combatant commands in general. You might see some people going from Space Force to U.S. Central Command in the Middle East, where there are space folks embedded there now, day to day, in those operations and helping, do strategic targeting for aircraft that are taking out, Islamic State targets, for example. Those things utilize space. So it's not that they're just going to be assigned to U.S. Space Force and then funnel through to U.S. Space Command. They could actually be used wherever they're needed, because space is such a broad mission, and that a lot of weapons and equipment and things really rely on space in order to work. GPS, for example, is another.
Well, it really is a good example, because you get into this whole satellite issue and protecting, in today's modern warfare without those satellites, without that communication between various points, you really can't move forward the way the United States military works. Have you been hearing concerns about budgeting issues and who's going to get the equipment? I mean, anytime we had a new airframe issue, you know, was money going to the Army, or was it going to go to the Marine, was it going to go to the Navy, was it going to Air Force? There was a lot of infighting over who got the money for what upgraded equipment. Have you heard that there are similar concerns now with Space Force?
So they're still working that out. I think the Pentagon is looking to stand up the Space Development Agency, for example, which is supposed to be the acquisition and, you know, equipment procurement arm of the U.S. Space Force. They're supposed to work hand in hand together to get that equipment that's necessary for the, quote, space warfighters. They're still working through that, but it's something that the Space Development Agency really needs to take control of as it comes into its own as an agency, which I believe is supposed to be stood up between fiscal 2021 and fiscal 2022. They have a plan of putting, you know, more satellites into orbit, for example, and buying that equipment to get those satellites into orbit that will be able to do things like expanded communications and rocket launch detection and things like that. So they have a plan to look at what the Space Development Agency is going to take control over. A question remains of what other agencies out there are going to be working as closely as they should with the Space Development Agency, such as the National Reconnaissance Office. The National Reconnaissance Office, of course, looks at a lot of classified projects and enacts those classified projects out in space, much of what the general public still doesn't know to. And so when you question how closely they're going to be working with one another, that still remains to be seen, and that still remains to be answered on how the Pentagon really wants to frame those individuals without, you know, having too much overlap or having too much bureaucracy going forward with who's supposed to actually be in charge of that type of equipment.
Well, I think the president said at the time that he was signing the National Defense Authorization Act that space is the world's newest warfighting domain, and we should all hope we'd never get too far down that road. And this sounds a little science fiction-y, and there's a lot of fiction writers who have written on war in space, but this is serious stuff now. It's no longer a joke, or it's no longer science fiction, is it?
No, absolutely. I mean, when you have heard from officials, I mean, there are obviously the Netflix special is coming out, for example, about the Space Force and the standing up of the Space Force. I believe Steve Carell is in charge of that. You see that they're going to be, you know, trying to poke fun at, like, what is a Space Force? What are they doing? Are they fighting aliens? Are we going to Mars and, you know, doing missions there that are just a joke? You know, it's that question of, you know, is there are those elements that, is it funny? And to a lot of folks, it is, because of how it kind of came to be. And there are still so many questions unanswered. So I think for the Pentagon to want to get a lot of that done, I think it's going to make folks see that it is a bit more serious. And, you know, they've shown, you know, through intelligence briefings, to Congress, as well as some of the reports that you get out every year from the defense intelligence agencies about how and what actors like Russia and China are doing in space. Dazzling satellites, for example, which is when a weapon looks at our satellite, for example, with like a laser or a type of, you know, kinetic or non-kinetic stream, and it just shoots it at our satellite, which blinds our satellites for a few minutes. And what does that mean? That means that we don't have coverage from that satellite over a particular section of Earth. And what that could mean, that has implications right here on Earth. Does that mean, you know, you don't get reconnaissance for a certain mission? Does that mean your GPS is spoofed? Does that mean you can't locate a target accurately? It could have all of these implications, and those are literally real world implications. So you see those things coming out of intelligence briefs of saying, you know, these are things that China and Russia aim to do, so that way we have less eyes on, you know, target our eyes on different elements of the Earth so that way they have the advantage instead of the U.S. having the advantage. So those are things that are being discussed at the highest levels. What is something that could be done to either thwart this? And one of the answers, the immediate answers to folks in policy making as well as the Pentagon was to create people who were here to deter that type of action, and that was the U.S. Space Force.
And I think when you concentrate effort, you get better results, right? So there, this is going to be a group that focuses on this issue, and hopefully by focusing on the issue, they can deter other countries from thinking that they can take an advantage. But is it just China and Russia who are playing in this game with the United States at the moment, or are there other countries we should be thinking about?
Well, I think it has to do with the actions that are still going on right here on Earth. I think Iran has a huge implication, as well as North Korea. I mean, one of the Space Force units that was charged and tasked with looking out for the rockets that were falling on Al-Asad Air Base back in January, you know, they were the ones that were watching this and watching that intelligence unfold. So, you know, you're not just watching for how, you know, Russia and China might be putting equipment up into space, but we're also seeing how our equipment, the U.S. equipment, is looking back down on Earth to those malign actors who, like North Korea, want to continue to test ballistic missiles. And to Iran, that is continuing to have, you know, there are implications between the two countries as they try to aim for a cooling off period. But instead, there might be a flare up here and there or a barrage of missiles heading toward U.S. troops. I mean, the people who are watching this go down are the very people who are now, as you said, in a concentrated unit, seeing what that intelligence brings back to the officials who have to be making those decisions right here on the ground. So for not just the equipment headed up into space, but it's also just, you know, the law of the land, which is right down here on Earth. And also going back to space for a second, you know, companies are also, like, private companies are getting involved of putting, you know, small satellites up into space that are communication satellites for themselves. And that's the U.S. and that's also our allies and partners as well. You know, and it gives us a moment to really connect with the allies and partners who want to see how the U.S. takes leadership in the space arena. So maybe they could replicate it, especially if they want to make, you know, their orbit safe for their satellites, or how they could have folks on the ground watching their satellites so something doesn't happen, but also sharing that intelligence to work with one another on how on what the intelligence shows us from the malign actors that also go after our partners and allies. It's all connected in a very, very broad way, and that's exactly what the Space Force is trying to achieve in looking at what the future holds in not just space, but how the implications go right back down here on Earth. And there are many to really keep an eye on.
Well, we're really lucky to have on Veterans Radio Rhina Pollack, who's the military.com air warfare reporter, who's been writing on Space Force for the last few months in particular. I'm wondering, like any good journalist, you have your notebook and you have probably some issues written in that notebook that you're still trying to sort out, and how it's going to fit in the Space Force. Give us some thoughts of some things that concern you on Spacebook that haven't quite yet made it out of your journalist notebook.
I think that something that a lot of folks really want answers to, especially in the immediate realm, is the very people who are doing these missions, who were a part of Air Force Space Command, but now fall under the U.S. Space Force as an assignment. I think that those folks are still waiting to see, like, what does my day-to-day look like, and what does this mean for the culture of this new service? Do we get new uniforms? What do we call one another? Those are still some of the things that they're working out, but I think what the Pentagon is stressing is that's very important as well. It's just what have officials decided on here is still to be determined. And I think that those are people who really want that to be determined quite quickly, because again, they're part of a brand new service and they're waiting for those answers. And I'm, you know, as a person from an outsider looking in, I'm hoping that gets answered for those folks, because I wouldn't like to come to work every day not knowing, you know, what's my role here, or what's my day-to-day look like, and who do I call the guy sitting next to me, and what do I say to, who do I address on this topic or this issue? Or, you know, I'm sure a lot of that is being established with the chain of command process, and like I said earlier, the commissioning and re-enlistment oaths and all these things, because Congress also needs to grant some of those authorities. But again, outsider looking in perspective, I hope it gets answered for those folks who might just be a little confused on what their daily lives look like and what they want to achieve, especially in as the new service takes shape.
Well, one issue I hope you get a chance to report on is the type of individual who's going to serve in the Space Force, their background, their experience with the knowledge that they're going to have to bring. These aren't, you know, army grunts. This is going to be a much different workforce, it seems to me, service force, it seems to me, and I look forward to hearing about how that gets reported out over time as you start bringing new people in, not just the 16,000 that transferred over from the Air Force, but as you recruit in new people into Space Force, what's the makeup of those new people going to be? I think it's a fascinating topic because of the technology of it and everything else associated with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. The Pentagon is still weighing how the Marine Corps can have an inter-service transfer or request an inter-service transfer, same with the Army and the Navy. You know, what does that speak to with all these individuals, of course, at the same time? Like, how do you pick a rank structure, given that if you especially bring in Navy and the Marine Corps members, that's a totally different rank structure, right? So, again, they just really need to parse out these things that have a unifying sentiment of what these folks and what makes a space person a spacer. That's just my take on what a person could be called going forward, because it's just not well defined at this moment, and the Pentagon needs to figure that out before it may detract folks from coming in, because maybe they don't have a footing on what their culture should be. And I hope that doesn't happen.
Well, again, I want to thank you for taking some time today talking to Veterans Radio. Tell folks, Raina, how they can continue to read about your work and follow along with your reporting.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime you can visit www.military.com in the daily news section, or also our author pages. I am under there as Oriana Pollack. You can follow me there with all of my day-to-day stories that include air warfare, the Air Force, that includes pilots, of course, all the way over to this new space mission for the U.S. Space Force.
Oriana Pollack, thank you for spending time today with Veterans Radio.
Thank you very much.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows by going to veteransradio.net. And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Veterans Radio needs you. If you like our shows that are informative, surprising stories, and relevant information on what's happening at the VA and the military, we'd like your support. Individual support of $5 to $50 a month, or corporate sponsorship of $1,000 to $10,000 would be welcomed. You can go to veteransradio.net, click on the sponsorship or support tab, pay online, and keep Veterans Radio on the air.